This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Amadhin, and this is Kelly and Ramya.
Welcome back to the program as we're swinging open a kind of reddish kind of shirt, two-button, and of course the gray fedora. With me is
Brock Richardson, and I'm coming from Kitchener, Ontario, and I'm wearing a t-shirt with blue and green, and I'm a white individual in a power wheelchair, again, coming from Kitchener, Ontario.
I should really say maroon, I guess. My shirt's more like kind of a rust color. I'm sorry. I think I said more of a red, more of a rust kind of color. So that is my hard thing to remember, Brock, where you say, oh, I've got to remember to not look away and stuff like that. Mine is, what color was I wearing again? Being low vision and on top of that colorblind. When I was a kid, that was the big test, right? Oh, you can see a little? Because, of course, you're blind. No, I can see a little bit. Oh, well, what color is my shirt? Oh, I'm colorblind. Yeah, sure, you can see a bit. little tests from people when we were the kids on the playground.
I had to do a little bit of as you were doing your intro, I had to look down and go, oh, since he's doing a clothing, what am I wearing again? And then, yeah, it was like, I had to remember because... You know, you put it on early in the morning and it's like, what am I doing at 3:00 in the afternoon?
Well, and it's one of those things, folks, we've been trying to do to be a little more inclusive out there with those who are especially new to us and maybe a little curious and like to know a little bit more about who's talking to you and who we are, what's a little bit behind the voices you're hearing. We'd like to welcome in our gardener to talk with us as we now have the fortune of doing every Friday on the program. Sue Kearney, hello. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good.
Oh, always wonderful to have you, but this is one of those days in the wintertime where the furthest thing from people's mind often is the garden, or maybe it's first and foremost because they're saying, oh, gosh, I can't wait till it warms up enough so I can get in the garden and get away from this cold. Wow.
You can have one or the other.
Exactly. That's the whole thing either way.
Yep.
There's no middle ground, right,
Sue?
Yeah, get those dancing in your head. What is it, the Christmas time? It's the sugar plums. But today, speaking of that, and the best thing to do, we always say, oh, it's a nice, cold, bright day for those who can look out and enjoy it. But there's also something else you can do. We're going to talk about armchair gardening. What is this?
Well, it is when you can cozy up in a nice, comfortable armchair, and either daydream about the flowers and what was in your garden, what you would like to put into your garden, because that takes a lot of planning, and this is a time to do it because you're not doing any work. You're actually just sitting there, and you can think, you can put some ideas out there to yourself, write some notes. I tend to write a lot of notes. I do my notes in Braille. I also have electronic Braille writer that I use so I can delete things as I go along. And when I do my notes, I will just say, okay, this particular day I found such and such in the garden. It did very well. And then you go back to, what was the weather like that day? Talking about weather. And that is one of the most important things because some things now don't do so well in certain gardens because we tend to have a lot of heat. We have dry spells. I don't remember so many dry spells in the summer. So you think about drought, certain things. I do know that my lettuce, my kale, it all went very early this year. It just it didn't do well at all. It did come back in the fall, but those are little notes that I've put down. Little things like that help you change your garden, help you not waste plants or waste seeds or waste money on that because you want to keep looking at that budget too. So that is some of the stuff.
We were talking earlier with Grant pertaining the fact that so much vegetables mm-hmm. primarily are really going up, and we've talked about floods, we talked mm-hmm. about the droughts around, so that it's not always, and they're saying, of course, farmers, well, the money's not coming back to us, and a lot of it mm-hmm. probably being the transportation and everyone in between getting paid to get to our shelves for distribution to us, so who do you pass that on to? But when you're sitting there on the, I mean, they've got big problems in their sense of how much they're trying to move and how much food we're talking. Mm-hmm. But when you're doing that, sitting back in the armchair, taking it easy, thinking, the lettuce was not good this year, because what do you find you mostly do in that being creative and thinking next or this spring, I'm going to do this, or this fall, I'm going to do this to change that potential outcome?
Mm-hmm. I will plant it earlier. I did not start it early in the house, so that was another thing, because I do know that May it was cold, and then it turned very hot very quickly. It turned around within a day, I think, almost.
Yeah.
If I look back at my notes, it turned very hot. So those are things I will probably do that a little bit less of the greens this year, or I will do them differently. Maybe find a different location in the garden. That's another thing that I have been looking at, because I've wanted to bring in more native plants, which are not necessarily vegetables. They could be wildflowers or something that I don't have to tend a tremendous amount of time with. So not always vegetables, but those are things that I've been looking at. And sometimes when you look around, you're sitting in your armchair and you're thinking, oh, what grew there this year? What maybe can I change? I have a tremendous amount of perennials. I started to go to perennials. They were easier. They come back almost every year. Sometimes you have to reseed. So I was going to a lot of perennials, and I'm probably going to stick with a lot of perennials rather than putting a lot of different seeds in planters this year. It didn't work out. The planters just didn't work out with certain things. Well, that's okay. That's how you learn to garden.
How much time, Susan, if you were to, give me a rough estimate, how much time do you spend in the armchair literally thinking, in your mind of what's good, what's bad? Like, as I sit here, I'm thinking of, the things you used to do in school when you brainstormed and you'd say on the left side, good. In the middle, maybe, on the right side, bad. How much time do you literally say to yourself, okay, in order to have a successful year or a potential successful year, I need to spend X amount of time sitting in my armchair and really thinking about it?
Going through my notes and actually thinking about it, going through my notes, I can probably spend a good day or more, and I don't do it all at once. A good day, a good 6-7 hours a week doing it. That because it is a lot of work. It's fun work, and I don't consider it work because I really like it. So it's not really work, but you do have to do that in order to save yourself a lot of time, a lot of energy. As I say, not have things thrown out. Because that can happen. That can happen very quickly. So it's about six, maybe 7 hours a week, and that is just on my outdoor garden. My indoor garden, this time of year, I do go through a lot of things too, because I will be wondering how to repot some of my plants that are indoors. So it's fun. It's a nice time to spend in an armchair.
And do you find, like, if you don't hit that, let's call it threshold just for correct terminology, if you don't hit that threshold of timing, do you find when you look back next year, you say, oh, maybe I didn't spend enough time in my armchair, and if I did and thought about this and that, maybe this would have gone better or worse. Do you find that?
Yes, in fact, and that's when I tend to overbuy plants. and put yes, and buy them, because then you say, oh my God, I didn't really think about that particular area, but it needs something. And then, you know, and then I go to a plant sale, which is a good thing, except often I will overbuy just to fill something up. I have a tendency to do that, or I'll find an amazing plant that I've never grown before, which I really like. I don't, and then I'll bring it home. I'll try it. If I like it, I will try it again the next year. If I can keep its seeds or its roots or whatever I need to keep in order to grow it, if it's successful, and hopefully it will be.
So by the time the garden show happens in March in Toronto, and you have done all your armchair, you're excited to get out there, you've done all your armchair gardening, the garden show shows up. Voila. Yes. Now you come back home. How much revamping time do you allow yourself before you're out there and changing all the things or a bunch of the things you had planned?
Oh, yes, because some of the designs are really interesting, or you get a really fascinating idea, or somebody is selling something absolutely amazing that you think, wow, I could use that. I could use that to plant seeds, or I could use that to do for cuttings. So you get that. Yes, for me, it's like being in a candy shop. I love that show any kind of plant sale. It's absolutely wonderful. So yes, then I have to turn around and say, oh, well, I got that, and that's going to need a place. That's going to need a place.
Right.
What kind of place? So then you got to do the research on the plant, figure it out, and it's all fun.
Well, so here's the solution. They have to move that event to February, maybe January even, so that you don't have to do so much revamping, because you'll just come out with ideas. We'll talk to you next week, Sue.
Thanks, bye.
She climbs back up into that armchair to get back to ciphering out the garden in her armchair gardening. We get our gardening chats here on Kelly and Ramya on Fridays at this time with Sue Kearney. So please return. We'll talk to her again next week. Up next, though, the Chatty Bookshelf with Ryan Huey. We do that every week around now as well on our Friday. Brock and Kelly will return.
Don't go away. There's more great conversation with Kelly and Ramya right around the corner.
Welcome back to the program. Kelly McDonald here. And I have to tell you, folks, the countdown is on. It's go time, ladies and gentlemen, for you to enter the Dream Big Contest. The contest closes February 8th. Wow. Mere days away, folks. So enter now for a chance to win a Tempur-Pro Adapt mattress. If you want some rule information and that opportunity to apply, folks, you go to ami.ca/KR contest. You got to do it if you haven't done it yet, folks. A lot of people in there, but you still have a darn good chance of winning this, and we want to be able to give it away to you. We will be, of course, announcing the winner next week here on the program. So definitely get in there, get registered, and let's have some fun, because it's always a lot of fun to give something away. Brock Richardson, he's over there. He's in Kitchener, Ontario, joining us on the program today.
Man, what a great thing. Kick off a great show like this and have a great contest like that to, culminate the beginning of this wonderful venture. And something we do on Fridays, as we often say, talk about staples, is Ryan Huey with the Chatty Bookshelf. Let's bring him on.
Who knew an entire library could fit inside your pocket? I'm Ryan Huey. This is the Chatty Bookshelf, where we talk audiobook trends, news, and author interviews.
Ryan, how are you?
I'm cold, guys. How are you guys doing? Thanks for having me again.
I'm cold as well. Whenever I'm doing whatever role I'm in here, I always have the window cracked open just ever so slightly, because if I don't, it gets really hot in here, and man, am I feeling the cold here today. So I'm right there with you. I feel like I should be putting a toque over my headset, but I won't.
You know what? You're a little bit more wild than me because I go near the window and I'm like, oh, the cold's getting in, and I push it close even more just to make sure. But guys, you know what? I just heard again, and I meant to touch base on this last week, but Kelly, the contest, what a better place to listen to an audiobook than in a new bed? Like, that would be great.
Yes.
I think I would love to maybe fall asleep to some audiobooks in that new bed. So get in there and, enter as much as you can. And let's hope, when the winner announces, it's to an audiobook listener or an audiobook lover, just like us.
That's your Friday gig, isn't it, Ry? Because really, that's when Ryan really advocates for the 4-day work week. So he's Monday to Thursday, Friday in, getting ready for the weekend, entertaining audiobooks in bed. That's the way to go, Ry.
Doesn't get better than that unless it's a long weekend.
You betcha.
So what wacky stories has the internet brought us this week in the world of audiobooks?
There's never, ever a shortage, but I had to touch base on this one because I think it affects a lot of us. So we're going to be talking about digital media rights and access. So I don't know where my phone is, so I apologize for that. We might be hearing that for a while. I thought it was on I thought it was on mute, but no, it's okay. That's all me, guys. But no, so it's really interesting, this story, and how it kind of came about, because I just thought that, libraries kind of had access and they were good to go, but there's a lot going on there. But what do you guys think about when I say the word libraries? I bet you guys have some fond memories like myself, right?
Oh gosh, yeah. Yeah. And even for me, even using the lending of audiobooks, or, when I was a kid and I tried to go through and read print books the best I can and stuff like that. But I know for myself, I remember going down and picking up my bag of audiobooks years ago. And I'd hang on to that bag until they started giving me the calls saying, you're going to go into collections unless you return those. And and they'd get back there pretty quick. Brock, you?
In school, I always thought of libraries as like research. The teacher would give you a book and, or a project and say, go find X number of books to, write your paper. And so for me, I have the memory of like just sifting through, the shelves and saying, what can I pick out of books that would make sense for this? So that's it for me.
It's interesting because I wish I could get some younger, I'm talking like 6-year-olds, maybe Abby's age, and how they kind of look at the library, because it's much different now. It's a lot of digital based stuff, whereas like the internet barely existed, if at all, when I was frequenting the library, and I still do, but not to the extent of what I would when I was younger. But would you believe that behind the scenes, there's a lot of contention, a lot of stress, a lot of hair pulling between the publishers, between the third parties, and between the libraries, and how they're having access to all the digital books? So it's kind of interesting and unfortunate, really, when people like us and everybody around the world, I'm hoping, would like to use the libraries more and more, and they're making it easier, but maybe a lot more expensive. If I could say that.
What do you mean?
So I didn't know this, but when a library purchases or is gifted print copies of books, obviously they have access to that forever, right? Until the book is destroyed or they can't repair it anymore. However, when it comes to digital now, with the magic of the internet, publishers are not actually selling directly to the libraries. They're going through third parties, and the third parties can charge whatever they want. Or if they do sell directly to the library, which is very, very few and far between, they're putting caps on the number of people that can borrow it, the length that they have to borrow it, and the length that the library actually owns and has the rights to actually lend the copy of the audiobook and the ebook. So it's interesting to sort of think about, the publishers are still in that let's make some money first, whereas now the authors are kind of like, whoa, we want more people to listen to our stuff or to read our stuff, so maybe we should be doing something about this.
Well, Ryan, I think it comes down to, and I get it, it's that how do we make our buck? Whether this was coming without the third party in the middle, you're going to assume there's going to be so much that the library is going to be able to do in the way of you're taking dollars away, letting people check out this book. We're not getting anything from that. So you're going to have to replace that book every 300 customers or whatever it might be. 300 free reads is the way that they look at it. So I'm not surprised. And of course, digitally, it allows you to basically allow it to self-destruct like those records in the 70s that they talk about. And, you know, hey, once you get to the end of this, it'll self-destruct. I think it was the Mission Impossible 45 that they did that as a public relations thing. But I get it, but we're in a world of, and it's nice if we are able and people are able to move to a very digital realm for their access. But it's very challenging because we are in a world where, just like that, these guys can say, you play by our rules. This is what we're doing. You get so many downloads. That's it. And
well, it's exactly
these libraries
right.
are having to find money elsewhere to get these things. Somebody's got to pay.
And, you know, it's the Libby's and the Overdrive apps that, unfortunately, you know, they have the best intentions at heart, but they're charging whatever they want to the libraries. And unfortunately, a lot of libraries, especially in North America, are publicly funded, right? They're donations and few government grants here and there. So they don't have the money to kind of keep these books on the shelf. So next time you're in the Libby app or the Overdrive app, you might not see your favorite book there anymore. And that's probably why, because it is just timed out. And now they have to kind of switch it out with something else. And it's becoming more and more of a thing. And I've been a part of a few different groups on Facebook and people have said, hey, where'd my book, my favorite book is no longer available at my local public library. Digitally, it's only available in print copy, but you know, the accessibility isn't there for me, whether I'm part of the low vision or the blind community, right? And that's kind of where things are heading. But there's a few authors that have kind of put this petition in order, and it's called the 1,000 Authors for Digital Media Access. And they're getting some headway here. They're signing it on, and authors are saying, no, we want publishers to sell direct to the library. None of this third party and none of these holds where it's, oh, you only get it for 6 months or you only get it for 2 years. Let them have access for forever because they want more people to hear or to listen or to read to their work, right? And I think it's
well,
a
this
really
is what
cool
we
initiative.
Talked about a couple of weeks ago, or was it last week? We were discussing free versus, you know, and authors being okay saying, yeah, but it's getting my name out there. It's interesting too, Ryan, because in the days of before we had the digital access that we got, the days of the old talking books that were loaned out, I understand now there are more people included in print restricted than the when CNIB distributed had volunteers read them, or the American Printing House with a blog, wherever, or out in the UK. So I get that, but those books, if damaged, a print one had to be replaced. You buy another one to replace that book because, you know, somebody ironed it or something like that, or at home had an accident with it. In our books, if the tape broke, they spun off another copy from whomever or said, hey, this needs to be replaced, and eventually got it. But because of the methodology, these were given to libraries to use for the print restricted. There wasn't any kind of cap put on them then. It's almost now with the digital age where you're not actually having a physical replacement that has to be done, cassettes or DVDs or CDs. You're just wondering, is it just simply because you can? It's an easier way to control, to count, to make it expire than before, where you waited till the disc snap or the cassette snapped or whatever, and people couldn't use it anymore. It's kind of a different impression. And are you really concerned about that many more print restricted people cheating purchases? It's not even coming from that. It's that scam that third, you know, party can have. I'm sorry, I shouldn't call it a scam. That ability to charge that the third party has.
And see, and it's kind of you're darned if you do, darned if you don't, right? Because the accessibility, the technology is great and it keeps advancing, but it also makes things easier from the publisher to put these caps and to put these little red tape things behind the scenes on their media and say, oh, okay, you have it in this app for 6 months and then it's gone. And it's not like they physically have to go and remove the tapes, right?
Well, what would you say if And again, I don't know a lot about this in the sense of, because it's been a while, I do most of my reading from Sila, and I don't ever think of, oh, gee, who can I forward this to? Continuing the chain of depriving the author, the publisher of the money. I don't think in that way. I'm not even sure I would know how or can I do it. I just assume you can't do that. Yeah. Now in this digital age, the same thing can happen where, no, we'll put a stop. You're not getting a chance to do that, Kelly. So I then shake my head and say, so why would we worry about said cap? It's not like these people can copyright it, you know, make their own copy and keep it. I believe these things still expire. Yeah.
I mean, and really, who wants to? You want a CD copy of the book when you have a digital download on your phone in your pocket? Like, I don't see the need, right? And it's interesting from that vantage point. And, you know, you're talking about forwarding it, and now it's just word of mouth. It's like, Ryan reads a book and he's like, Kelly, I love this book. You should check it out. I think you would really like it. And then there you go. There's another reader, right? Because you're probably going to at least check it out.
And you're not forwarding it to me. You're saying, man, go buy it from Audible like I did, or go borrow it from Sila like I did.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what I think they're missing out on.
And when situations like this, like it's a monopoly, you know, like this is the third party, like we were talking about earlier. Nobody can say, you know, this is what I'm going to charge. No one's going to say, okay, they might look at it and go, well, that's expensive, but no one's really there stopping them saying, well, you can't do that. And until that happens, it's not going to change. And that's just the way, you know, things are, and it's unfortunate. And that's just the way it is. Rye, thanks so much.
I think it could be so different.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. It could be different for sure. Great stuff as always, Ryan. We really appreciate it. And have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks so much, guys. And keep tuning in, because we got some great authors and narrators coming on to visit us in the coming months. So we'll see you there.
We look forward to it. That's Ryan Huey, who is in charge of the Chatty Bookshop every Friday at this time.
Just gets you frustrated, you know, when you discover the mechanism in which to control or to profit from, and you just stop and say, okay, I understand. Don't be handing it for free. But we'll step aside for a moment. Grant Hardy will return with us. Let's revisit and weigh in on conversations from the past week. It's Cut for Time in a moment.
It's fun, insightful, and inclusive. Kelly and Ramya return in a minute.
Always want to remind you to check out the Kelly and Ramya podcast, available to you. Just use your favorite podcatcher. Got lots of great content where you can check out the show and just settle back and listen at your leisure while you're in there. Maybe give us a rating and review. Of course, I'm setting you up for something, folks, because we're now going to talk a little bit about some of the things that have gone on here on the program this week and expand a bit. We call this segment Cut for Time. We've invited Grant Hardy back. Brock, of course, still with me here on the show. And really what happens is we get into talking about the things we might have wanted to comment on if we'd had time to do so. But, of course, our guests are our stars. And we step aside, make sure they get their words in. And this is an opportunity for any expanding on those comments they make that each of us might want to have. So I'm going to turn things over to Brock, who leads us in our first item of interest.
Well, on Monday's show, Grant Hardy joined us to talk about an emergency system being put in place in BC. Here he is explaining how it will work.
You know, it's not a question of if, but when we have the next big earthquake. And so one thing that is happening, and it should be active in BC by 2024, is this new warning system. It's going to be a combination of sensors in the ground and in buildings, in coastal communities, as well as throughout the lower mainland, which is going to be giving people minutes or possibly seconds of warning. That's really the best you can do. Going to be good because it's going to assist, firstly, anything infrastructure related, like turning off gas lines or closing down bridges so that you're not driving across a bridge, but also just for people like you and me, giving us the opportunity to, shelter in place or leave dangerous areas, just find an area to shelter.
I get very, very nervous over emergency systems. And this topic hit me close to home for a couple of reasons. The first one is back in 1995 and 1996, when I was 4 and 5 years old, my family and I experienced 3 house fires. And the first one was a mistake by my father. The last two were due to the last one was due to electrical issues with the fire not necessarily being put out properly by the fire department. And on the third fire in the house, it was the first day of school in September. And my whole family came out to wish me off to kindergarten, and it was fine and everything was well. And as the bus driver pulled up, she turned around and she said, "Your house is on fire." And our house was on fire, and it went up in flames very quickly. And I never knew a day before then and since then when my entire family came out and greeted me off to school. And so these warning systems are very good. The second quick story that I have for you about fires and warning systems is when I was in school, in high school, and the fire alarm would go off, we would have to stay in the stairwell if we were in a wheelchair and wait for the fire department to come and give us the "coast is clear." Well, in this case, the kids were coming down the stairwell and they would say, oh, they would be all panicked and they'd be all upset. And remember, I'm also visually impaired. So they'd be all upset and they'd be all worried. And as they were going down the stairs, someone said, "The fire's over there." And I turned, and the fire was about 3 feet away from where I was. Was there anybody with me? Nope, because the educational assistant said, "Oh, I'll be downstairs and I'll let someone know that you're up here." Did they? Yes, and the only reason they did was because the kids let someone know. So two situations in my life were very, very scary, Kelly.
Yeah, that's a lot to take in, Brock. I can't fathom the situation at the school. I can't fathom these. It's beyond. I know as a kid, I was always curious of warning systems, especially with tornadoes. Being in southwestern Ontario, we knew how voluntary we were for bad weather. And I remember being a little kid saying to my father, "Hey, can we find the air raid siren?" And at that time, after wars, that's what was used if in the case of a disaster. Only to come to find out, as I started to get into my teenage years, these cities didn't have it. They had removed them. Not until we had our alert systems, and again, I won't say every city, I'll go rephrase that, but most of these cities didn't have any way of you knowing until we had the alert system a few years ago that gives us our amber calls and tornado warnings, which I've had the experience of having it go off and saying, "Tornado, take cover," which we darn well need, Grant.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just going to say that to your stories, Brock, that you mentioned, which are really incredible. And I didn't know that about you, but can't even imagine what that would be like. But, you know, what I will say is that emergency prep for people with disabilities is something that seems like it's just been swept under the rug. Like, I don't want to say emergency prep is down to a science, but most people kind of know what to do in a fire. You know, there's maybe the sprinkler system, there's the smoke alarm, you all, you know, run outside, you go to a specific meeting spot, yada yada. But for people with disabilities, there's a lot of stuff that's not really absolute, and I think that people are still working out, and that's really scary, especially because just having that sense of control, I think, is and preparation is so important, and that's one thing that people often lack. But also, dare I say it, a lot of my friends, you know, with disabilities, live in places, maybe older places or places where just more stuff tends to happen, and you already have this under preparedness for emergencies that can be really really intense and really scary. So I think it's good to open that dialogue and keep talking about this more. Do we want to go to your item, Kelly?
Oh, sure, Grant. I thought we were going to cover your David Johnson.
Oh, we can do that. I just
go ahead.
No, we're a little tight ahead for time here. Okay.
Oh, no, we're good. You go ahead.
Okay. All right. So on Tuesday, we spoke with, well, you guys actually spoke with para athlete and runner David Johnson, who did a documentary about his efforts that he actually created and edited himself. Here he is talking a little bit about some of that content.
Yeah, well, that's what I wanted this project, everyone to be able to experience and get something out of it. People with no vision, people with little vision, and people that just maybe don't even like sport or love sport. And I wanted everyone to be interested. So that was a little bit challenging. The project itself doesn't have a video description. I thought about doing it, but I watched it myself, and I had some of my other friends with lower vision than myself watch it, and they found that they could get pretty much everything out of it. It is a documentary kind of vibe. Yep. So it has me narrating it, and you kind of can get the full picture, I feel like, with your eyes closed or eyes open.
Yeah, this guy is a real star. I've wanted to get him on the program for a while. He's just really, really like modest and really chill, but also is an incredible athlete. And what I really love is people like him that are able to, you know, increase the representation of not only people with disabilities on screen and in sports, we know all about that, but also behind the scenes as well, in front of the camera, or sorry, behind the camera and, you know, behind the sort of video editing, audio editing software, what have you, like that is an area that can be really lacking. And so I think it's really cool that he was able to do that. What do you think, Brock?
Yeah, it's a challenge to be an athlete, and you get those rewarding times, you get those tough times, and so it's really cool to kind of highlight stories and show the good in athletes, because there is a lot out there, but it is a tough job, and I think that this was well depicted in the clip. Cal?
Well, you know, it's interesting, too, because sometimes what you tend to have are former athletes retired, maybe from bocce or something like that, who go into broadcasting. That happens. I've heard it. Brock, you've heard of that.
Like that, yeah.
Yeah, as opposed to us getting in that catbird seat and experiencing what he's working on now and is behind the scenes and the things that aren't just the athletic endeavors, the putting together the documentary, the utilization and coordinating with others to work together. And plus, we heard he's also on Mary Mammoliti's Cooking Confession podcast. People can go check out that avenue and link that up to, as we were saying yesterday on the show, food. And its importance when it comes to athletes. But I think that that's the stark reality. So many people, we all have other things we're doing, we're working on, we're interested in. And I think that that's really, really cool. And I think it's going to be very interesting, this documentary and what he goes on to moving forward. On Wednesday, we had our financial chat, folks, with Ryan Shin. This month, he dove into credit cards and some of the pros associated with them.
The beauty part about, you know, a credit card for those of us with limited vision is, you know, sometimes we can just tap. We don't have to try to see that money, figure out, you know, is this a 10 or a 20, or am I actually handing over a 50? You know, I'm not a high roller like you, Kel, but...
You know, I know, but you will hundreds. Do what you can, Ryan.
but I mean, I'll tell you something. You know, what's great about a credit card is they're great ways to track your budget, track your spending. They catalog everything you spend. They're very good at sort of keeping yourself in check.
So I've always, for years, terrified of bothering with a credit card, worried, especially when I was on disability, of overextending myself. Dreadful fear. My family, my parents, who had had a rough time as well, being co-signers and left holding the bag. So I have had a lot of experience to where I've said, okay, I'm going to be worried about this. When I was on disability, got myself very deep into the overdraft. When I got my credit card, finally, I did get deeper. And I've been able to navigate out of that. Not because I'd overspend. Ryan talked about the pros and when you need to utilize it. When you, you know, maybe you have to buy something on credit because you need it. And there are so many positive things that come from that. Yeah, you build a good, you know, if you can make your payments, it helps you build that. And I know that was my dad's reason in pushing me to get a credit card when I was a kid. For down the road, that establishing your line of credit and the importance of that. So I totally very much believed in that, but I did tend to lean a little more to the negatives, to the things to be concerned about, the things that scared me about getting out of hand with it. And that was kind of what I was most afraid of in dealing with having a credit card. I really love this. I think it's important to talk about those negative things. Yes. And I'm glad Ryan touches on that later in the segment. You could check that out. But I like also that we explored pros about it, because that is there for a reason, to help. And it's one of those things in life. And we can see so many different things that if you over abuse it, it can get you in trouble. If you utilize something the right way, it can help you for sure, Brock.
Yes. And I think Ryan really did... you know, depict it really well. I had to get a credit card early on in my life, talking about being an athlete, because they would put, you know, the hotel in your name, and they would cover the
card.
They would cover the room, but any incidentals, you had to put a credit card down. So I had a credit card, and that was the reason I had it. And you know, I've been in some good times and some bad, and it's just managing that. But sometimes it's tough, because the easy answer is, oh, I'll pay that off another time. It's no big deal. And it ends up becoming a big deal.
How about a line of credit, Grant? Do you have anything like that? I know for me, it was always hard. You needed something to actually be able to put down, like a house or something that they could, okay, we'll let you borrow, but because we know if you default, we'll get that house. I never had that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think absolutely, if you're looking for a loan, if you're looking for money to borrow, a credit card is definitely not the best idea. It's better to have an actual line of credit through a bank that you trust. But I just wanted to mention the single advantage of a credit card that I love, which is, if something happens to your card, if someone abuses you, rips you off, you lose your card, you get an unauthorized charge on there, the credit card companies are often really good about reversing that. I mean, if you used a debit card or cash,
right,
you know, you'd have to sue the person, but meanwhile, you're out that money. Whereas a credit card, it really offers that protection. So I think as long as credit cards are used correctly, properly, and you don't get into debt, it's great. I mean, unfortunately, now we have a disadvantage where businesses can actually charge you an additional fee for using your credit card. So worth checking that, but lots of advantages.
Do you, Grant, Brock, tend to use your wallet or whatever, more the electronic version with your credit or debit? Because I know that was one of the things I first thought about. It's nice not to carry the money. And also, if you use a credit card, I'm told too, in a lot of cases, you buy something, it helps with the warranty or you know, that trail of purchase. Grant, do you tend to use the wallet electronic now, or still stick to the plastic?
I use e-payments like 99.9% of the time, unless I'm not allowed to. I always just have my phone. I always use Apple Pay. It gives me a nice little like receipt history, accessible receipt history. You don't even have to pull out your wallet at all. It's absolutely fantastic.
Mr. Richardson?
I find myself needing to pull out the debit card, because if I use my wallet, to me, it feels like a credit card in my phone. You know, it's like beep, beep, beep. And then you look at your bank account and you're like, wait, where did that money go? To me, I think it's physically taking it out and going, do you really need to make this purchase? And if the answer is yes, then you then you have to punch in your code, and it just, yeah, there's more steps to hold you accountable.
Just don't keep enough money in there so you can't buy anything anyway. Grant, we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah. Okay, sounds good.
And Brock, I would have loved to have known. I'm sure he was going to agree with that solution. Brock and I will be back shortly, folks. Wrap up the program, tell you a little bit about what's going on in AMI TV and AMI Audio over the weekend. We'll be right back.
We'll be back with more of Kelly and Ramya after this short break.
Told you a little bit about what you can go back and find via the podcast in the last segment. Now let's talk a little bit about today's show. Brock, as our sit-in, fill-in co-host today, any segment you want to give a shout to?
Yeah, I really liked Susan Kearney's gardening segment. We were talking about armchair gardening. I hadn't the slightest clue what that was when we came in to do this. When I thought of armchair, you know, I'm thinking of armchair general manager in the sports terms, which is sort of the same kind of thing, because you sit in your armchair and you say, well, you know, this is what I would have done if I was in their shoes. And so similar, but really great conversation and really informative from a guy who doesn't have a green thumb.
I loved our chat with Ryan Hui today. Again, Ryan, over the last few weeks, has really fired us up with different topics, different things going on. And it's a good thing. As much as some of them are alarming, concerning, where we stop and say, well, hold on, how will that change? The reality is the book world, audiobook world is really going to change. It's really become something. It's very special, and we're very lucky where it's at. If we could have had this much success 30 years ago with the popularity of audiobooks, everything would have been available by now that was published, and that would be a great thing. But we're I can't say catching up, slowly but surely, and they say that wins the race. But we do have to speak up, do have to see the world of authors and everything change. Check that out via the podcast. You can subscribe using your favorite podcast platform. Now, folks, this weekend on AMI Audio, don't miss a second of AMI's original podcasts. You can listen to Podcast Roundup on Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio. Each episode of Podcast Roundup features host Jacob Szymanski and Nazreen Abdel-Majid as they spotlight new original AMI AMI Audio podcasts. That's Podcast Roundup, Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
This Sunday, Kelly, on AMI TV, catch Political Blind Date. The episode is titled Clean Water. Karen Weaver, the mayor of Flint, Michigan, and Mitch Tulin, the mayor of Huron Kinloss, Ontario, explore the ways on how to ensure that the over 40 million Americans have access to clean water around the Great Lakes. And examining this will be so great. And I'm really looking forward to listening to this and watching this as well. And again, you can catch this at 3:30 p.m. Eastern on AMI TV.
He's Brock Richardson out in Kitchener, Ontario, joining us as co-host for the last few days. Brock, threw you right into the deep end. Thank you so much. I hope it's been fun.
It has been really fun. And the funny thing is I had a plan of, you know, coming in and investigating the studio and seeing what that would be like before I got to be thrown into the deep end. And here we are, and I couldn't be happier having done this and having gotten through 3 days and really enjoyed myself. And once again, and still holds the form, we learn something every single day.
Yeah, very much so, Brock. It's what it's all about, whether we're listening to our contributors, whether we're experiencing something new like you have this week in co-hosting on the program. It's been absolutely wonderful. All right, folks, on Monday, we're going to inform you about a blind hockey event for the whole family coming up in BC. Committee reporter Carol Yapo will give us the details on that.
And I will return on Monday with a sports update. We're going to talk about John Herdman returning as coach for Soccer Canada. Is this the right decision or the wrong one? I will let you in on my thoughts.
He has done so much, that guy. So that's really tremendous. Looking forward to that conversation. And Brock, It's getting close to pitchers and catchers reporting, so I'm looking forward to our talks there. Looking forward to all the conversations, ladies and gentlemen, that we have on the program. Hopefully you'll join us Monday, beginning at 2 p.m. Eastern time. Have a fantastic weekend, and do me a favor. Get out of here, will ya?
Hosts, Kelly McDonald and Ramya Amuddin.
Reporter, Grant Hardy.
Senior show producer, Jeff Ryman. Visual producer, Megan McGrath.
Graphics, Andrew Antonello. Production assistant, Kingsley Juco.
Control room operators, Daniel Penamondo, Eliza Rocco, Parker Oxtoby.
Director, Irene Solomon.
Manager of live production, Paula Dineen.
Manager of operations, Kyle Harper.
Manager of AMI audio, Andy Frank.
Director of TV production, Kara Nye.
Vice President, Content Development and Production, John Melville.
President and CEO, David Arrington.
Give us your feedback, 1-866-509-4545.
Copyright 2023, Accessible Media, Inc.
Hey guys, it's Brock Richardson, who has been co-hosting Kelly and Ramya alongside Kelly McDonald for the last number of days. And it's funny, I was asked publicly to do today's vanity card on yesterday's show, and I didn't take long to think about what I wanted to talk to you guys about, and that is how we were talking about placements over the last couple of days and the importance of, you know, apprenticeship programs and those things. And one of the things that came to mind, which I didn't get a chance to say in as much detail as I wanted to, was the fact that I went to an employment place here in the GTA for individuals who have various disabilities, and the role was that they would place them into jobs. And Greg David was talking about it being very hands-on, these roles, especially here at AMI. And in that role, I would be forever grateful, because I was able to go to their meetings, able to place people in jobs, able to, you know, really get on the ground. And I have a situation of a client we got, and this client was a very challenging client. And he would call every day, "Do you have a job for me today? Do you have a job for me today? What about now? What about now?" I mean, I would finish on a Friday of any given week, and I'd come back on a Monday, and he would invariably have about 3 voicemails on my phone at work. And eventually, my supervisor said to me, "You know what? If you place this guy a job and find him a job, I will get you lunch, and we'll go for lunch, and we'll have a lunch, and that will be sort of your end project for co-op and placement and all that." And I'm happy to say, after about 3 months of effort, I found him a job at a water softener company. And he worked there for quite a number of years after I had left. And I am very proud to say that I did place him and many other people after that. But if it wasn't for the hands-on ability that I was given to do these jobs, including the one here at AMI, when I started coming right out of school, I wouldn't be where I am today. So I'm very appreciative of the opportunities that I have had over the years.
Hi, I'm Ramya Amuddin. Join me weekly for AMI Audiobook Review, the podcast that explores new titles, introduces us to famous narrators, and updates what's hot at the Center for Equitable Library Access. Download episodes of AMI Audiobook Review from your favorite podcast provider.